Blog Talk Radio. If you're listening live on Blog Talk, November 23rd, 2016 edition of Don't Let It Go Unheard. And this is where we discuss news, politics, and culture from the perspective of Ayn Rand's philosophy. Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism uniquely upholds the right to the pursuit of your own happiness. I'm your host, Amy Peekoff, and I'm hanging out over here in the chat room at Blog Talk Radio. And thank you to those of you who are joining today. I know as it's the day before Thanksgiving, not necessarily too many people are going to be here live, but I am hoping that everybody will catch up sometime over the weekend and listen. Some people are saying over in the chat room that they just barely now got sound. Just Jean says, only 3 refreshes today. Got the sound while the music was still playing. So I guess that's better than normal. So Blog Talk is a little bit, I guess, tough if you're trying to listen live, huh? We get a nice production of a podcast for everybody and a delivery of that podcast over iTunes and elsewhere, but maybe for you guys. I thank you even more for joining in and, you know, putting up with the frustration of having to refresh for the sound and everything. What I will do is I'm going to go over to the little Blog Talk studio and let people know. They have a little promote thing you can say. Look, I'm broadcasting right now. Not everybody knows that I'm going to be doing 2 shows a week, because ever since I've announced I'm going to do 2 shows a week, I haven't done it consistently yet so far for various reasons beyond my control. And then here I am on Thanksgiving week actually doing 2 shows. Easily, I could have just kind of left the show that I had from Monday, because I think that, you know, it's a little bit evergreen type of topic, what was going on Monday, you know, what does the Trump presidency mean? But I'm glad we're here today, because there's some interesting news about potential and actual cabinet picks that Trump is making that are worth discussing. In particular, this morning I've been sort of embroiled with discussions with objectivists on social media about the rumor, as I understand it right now, it's just kind of a rumor, that John Allison, who was the former CEO of BB&T, is being considered for heading up the Treasury under Trump. Now, there's other candidates as well, and who knows whether he's even going to get it, but there's a Bloomberg article. I've got it over at the blog at don'tletitgo.com in the program notes, so go check it out if you haven't, saying that he is being considered. And I haven't heard any negation of that rumor or anything that, you know, that he's rejected or anything like that. I do know that in the past, when people have said, oh, John Allison should run for president, that they've said, no, you know, he really doesn't want to do that. But I don't know, you know, so again, I don't know whether this is something that he's even interested in doing. It seems like it wouldn't even get to this stage of being reported in Bloomberg if there weren't at least some discussions about it. And I'm going to go ahead and let you know what I think of the potential. If you haven't already read what I've put out there on social media, if you want to tell me what you think of that rumor or anything else that you've heard about the potential and actual cabinet picks of Donald Trump, you can call in and tell me what you think. The number is 760-888-5817. Again, that's 760-888-5817. For myself, because I am not an expert by any means about a number of these people, I am going to, you know, express opinions only to the extent that I can based on the knowledge that I have. but I've got a couple of strong opinions. I do think that Allison, if he is selected, would be a good thing, and I'll give you my argument as to why. And then there's another pick that has disturbed me, and it's the pick of Trump for the head of the CIA. Pompeo, is that how you pronounce his name? Somebody's going to have to correct me on that. But I have serious problems with him because of his view about Snowden. And yes, I think his view about Snowden, which is that he thinks that Snowden should be brought here and, of course, subjected to a trial, et cetera. But he thinks that the proper outcome of that trial is that Snowden should be executed. And to me, this is enough to raise a red flag that I would not want to see him anywhere near the CIA. And I'm hoping only that the Senate confirmation process is going to, you know, serve as a serious stumbling block for him. So as I said, you can go ahead and take a look at the potential cabinet picks. Of course, there's Sessions and other people that we can talk about, Bannon, and call me and let me know your views. 760-888-5817 is the number to do that. And while you're thinking about that, if you go to the blog at don'tletitgo.com, the first program note that I have is not about a cabinet pick per se, although it might be related to the attorney general pick. And it is that Donald Trump is apparently dropping the threat of investigating Hillary Clinton, renewing the investigation of Hillary Clinton for the mishandling of classified information. So New York Times article that was just published yesterday says that Trump said on Tuesday he had no intention of pressing for an investigation into Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server or the financial operations of her family's foundation. Therefore, he's dropping the, quote, lock her up pledge that became a rallying cry for his campaign for the White House. Mr. Trump, who branded his rival Crooked Hillary and said she would go to jail if he were president, said in an interview with reporters and editors at the New York Times that he was no longer interested in pursuing Mrs. Clinton, in part because he wanted to heal the wounds of a divisive campaign. Now, I'm wondering, you know, I've heard just a little bit over the last couple of days. In fact, Joss Whedon was tweeting out something about that Hillary Clinton should challenge the results of the election, demand recounts in various places and all sorts of stuff. And of course, we know sometimes in recounts, just huge boxes of Democrat ballots will just mysteriously appear and things like this will happen. Maybe there's something going on now where she's not going to pursue a recount if he doesn't pursue her legally. I don't know. But here's a quote from Trump. I don't want to hurt the Clintons. I really don't, Mr. Trump said during the interview. Again, quote from him, she went through a lot and suffered greatly in many different ways. You mean like her husband cheating on her in the White House? Anyway, he says, and I am not looking to hurt them at all. The campaign was vicious, end quote. So it's all politics. The idea that, you know, him saying that she's crooked and that maybe, you know, he's going to come in and stand up for the rule of law and actually pursue a prosecution of somebody who has violated the law, he's dropping it entirely. And I'm wondering, you know, at what point do Trump supporters just become extremely, extremely disheartened? As of now, even though I am, you know, potentially interested in some of his cabinet picks and what they're going to do and things like that, as of now, I'm very happy that I was a never Trump and that I did not vote for Trump, because it looks like any of the half decent things that he's promising, he is, you know, going back on considerably. New York Times writes, they say his reversal on prosecuting Mrs. Clinton was particularly striking given the outsized role the issue played during the presidential campaign, in which her use of a private email server as Secretary of State became a prominent theme and one she has blamed for her loss to Trump. Mr. Trump said he wanted to, quote, move forward from the subject. Without elaborating, he said that, quote, we'll have people that do things. He says, perhaps a reference to FBI or Republicans who might continue to press for prosecutions. He says, but the president-elect made clear that he would not seek to pursue an investigation himself, nor make it a priority he assumes after he assumes office. Now, as I understand, when he was talking in the debate about the fact that he was going to instruct his attorney general to appoint a special prosecutor, apparently this is all out of protocol and he shouldn't have been saying that stuff in the first place. But at the same time, he should not be saying these things now and also sending people out there to talk about why it's the right decision to not prosecute and all this kind of stuff. As I understand it, a lot of what he's doing now in, you know, walking back this promise is tampering juries and things like this. So it's going to be interesting. Broken Promise blared the headline on Breitbart News, a conservative news site that has strongly backed Trump. Quote from Trump, he says, it's not something that I feel very strongly about. He says, quote, this has been a very painful period of time. Now, during the second debate, they're going ahead and they're quoting him. This is what he said. He said, quote, if I win, I'm going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation because there's never been so many lies, so much deception. End quote. Now, Ann Coulter is saying that he is overstepping his role. She says, I thought we elected a real Donald Trump president. Did we make him FBI and DOJ? His job is to pick those guys, not to do their jobs. So now she's going to criticize him just because he's doing the job. She was, as I recall, an ardent supporter of his in the campaign. So as I said, I'm glad I was a never Trump. I'm not myself pleased with him going out there and saying that. He should probably just have kept his mouth shut, appointed people, and let them do their jobs. And probably if you get somebody who isn't being told from the top down not to investigate her, I think the natural course would be to continue at least the investigations of the financial dealings of the foundation. At least that's got to happen. I don't know if there's been any, you know, sort of kind of, you know, the investigation has run its course concerns with respect to the email thing. But that should be reopened too if there isn't a top-down decision preventing it. So why would he go out there and do this? I'm wondering, again, if it's either stuff about the Electoral College rumblings and or the calls to have recounts and things like this. He thinks that he's going to quash those by promising not to prosecute, you know, not to pursue that indictment. Tim in the chat room says it's not a broken promise. Trump is not president yet. But as I understand, he's sending people out there like Giuliani and I forget who else who are sort of backing up this decision and speaking in ways that might tamper any future investigation or at least a future prosecution in terms of jury. Now, Tim says that Trump switching on the Hillary prosecution could forestall an Obama pardon. That's true. Pompeo says, Tim in the chat room, he's going to help me for later because I do want to criticize Pompeo. Definitely. Yeah, I understand the idea that it's not a broken promise because he's not president yet. But if he is doing things now that will undermine any investigation that might take place, which is something that I understand he is doing, then that is a broken campaign promise, even if he's not president yet. He says, we don't want Hillary to be pardoned by Obama. Yeah. What we do want is we want Edward Snowden to be pardoned by Obama. But of course, he's been saying, no, he doesn't think he can do that. I'm going to have to actually dig up that article because I don't have it over here in the program notes. So I'm going to pick that one up. But he's been trying to say that he doesn't think that he can and everything else. So and now that potentially we're going to have Pompeo as head of CIA, we definitely would like to get him pardoned. And also, if you also get Bolton as Secretary of State in there as any kind of an advisor about what to do about Snowden, that could be a problem. We'll get to that when we talk to it. So let's go ahead and go to some of the cabinet picks, the latest cabinet picks. And the one that some of my friends on Facebook have been excited about is the cabinet pick for Secretary Betsy DeVos. It says President-elect Donald Trump named two prominent Republican women to cabinet posts on Wednesday, recruiting Betsy DeVos, a prominent Republican philanthropist and educational activist, as education secretary, and then Governor Nikki Haley of South Carolina as ambassador to United Nations. As I understand it, both of these appointments are going to have to be confirmed by the Senate, but these are the choices that he's announced. They're saying that he's been, you know, trying to diversify his cabinet. That's really the headline, is that he's moving to diversify his cabinet by having these women. The other thing that he's done, they say he's nearing an announcement that Ben Carson, the retired neurosurgeon, is going to be not Surgeon General, which is what you might expect, but Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. I'd be interested to hear what you guys think about that. I seem to recall something about Carson being involved in housing. So it's not like, if I recall correctly, again, I'm going to have to go back and look this up, and maybe some of you guys in the chat room can help me out with this, but I seem to recall that he has some involvement in housing. Yeah, we've got the Fox News about Betsy DeVos from Tim Peck in the chat room. Yeah, we'll get back to some of the stuff about Hillary maybe in a bit. Yeah, so I'd be interested to know what Carson's experience is. Of course, Carson had said that he actually doesn't want to have any positions in government. This is something that people were talking about when he was being floated for Surgeon General, which is where you logically think you would see him, maybe Health and Human Services, right? Something like that. But instead, it's going to be Housing and Urban Development. And the question, you know, the question that occurred to me, of course, when he said, I don't want to have any job in government is, so why were you running for president if you don't want a job in government now? It's very weird, but we'll see what happens. It has not been confirmed. Now it says that Ms. DeVos and Ms. Haley would be the first women in Trump's cabinet, and Carson would be the first African-American. They say Haley is an Indian-American and a rising star in Republican politics. I do want to hear your opinions there in the chat room about what you think of Haley as ambassador to United Nations, what you think about that. I have heard some good things about her, but I don't have really enough knowledge to get too excited. I started looking at DeVos because I was interested in what her education policy would be. If you recall, we were talking about a potential policy positive for Trump being the fact that he had talked about getting rid of the Department of Education. And I don't see any explicit discussion of that here. And in fact, I don't know that we're even seeing explicit discussion of getting rid of Common Core. I picked out an article from Detroit News. I guess DeVos is from Michigan, so this is why it's coming from Detroit News, that describes a little bit more her background in education and what her policy preferences are, et cetera. So oh, and I'm getting a nice ad in my ear here. Let me turn that off. All of these great news sites, they have to make money somehow, right? So they have to put some ads in your ear. She has been seen as a national leader in the school choice movement. She wants to, quote, empower parents to find good schools for their children. So what you're doing here with school choice, which often, if it's done correctly, can be a step in the right direction, is you're saying, let's take that money, that government money, which is currently being funneled through the huge bureaucratic institutions of departments of education and the so-called public schools, the government schools, let, you know, the parents go ahead and just find different schools for themselves. They could be traditional public schools in other neighborhoods, charter schools, they're saying virtual schools, or private institutions. They say that, and this is Trump, Betsy DeVos is a brilliant and passionate education advocate. Under her leadership, we will reform the U.S. education system and break the bureaucracy that is holding our children back so we can deliver world-class education and school choice to all families. Break the bureaucracy sounds like good language. It sounds like vague language, so we don't know if that means getting rid of the Department of Education. And as I said, given the, I would say, irresponsible announcement of not seeking prosecution of Hillary Clinton, and like I said, the corollary that I have to look more into is sending out Giuliani and other people to talk about why that's a good thing and potentially tampering anything that might have taken place. I don't like, you know, what he's done with that with Hillary Clinton. You know, if he says he's breaking the bureaucracy, does that mean he's going to keep the, not necessarily campaign promise, but something that he's talked about that he was very interested in and potentially getting rid of the Department of Education? I don't know. Apparently, there was a meeting between Voss and Trump and Pence at the golf club. And they say at the meeting, this is again the Detroit News piece, Trump, Pence, and DeVos discussed Common Core and, quote, setting higher national standards and promoting the growth of school choice across the nation, end quote. So if they're talking about setting higher national standards, they are not talking about getting rid of Common Core. And certainly if you're not getting rid of Common Core, you're not getting rid of the Department of Education. They also say in this Detroit News article that she's part of multiple groups that have offered support for the controversial Common Core state curriculum standards, but her views on the subject are less than clear. So what they might be doing, they might be thinking they're doing, because if they're talking about having national standards, maybe you're talking about, you know, getting rid of Common Core and replacing it with something that has Trump's name written all over it so he can feel important and awesome. Trump has vowed, they talk about in the news, you know, in his campaign, he vowed to get rid of the standards, Common Core, calling them a disaster, like so many other things he called, right? And saying the educational curriculum, quote, has to be local. During the GOP primaries, Trump suggested he might get rid of the Department of Education altogether. My guess is if they're talking about national standards, they are not talking about getting rid of the Department of Education. So this is a little bit disturbing. Just Jean says in the chat room that Trump's contract with the voters promises to get rid of Common Core. Yeah, I remember reading that. And, you know, let's see here. DeVos on Common Core. We've got a tweet. Oh, thanks for sending that, Tim, in the chat room. I'm going to go ahead and take a look on her thing. She says, many of you are asking about Common Core. To clarify, I'm not a supporter, period. Read my full stance here. Now, that's fine. But if what you're going to do, Ms. DeVos, is do a repeal and replace, and you're going to have, quote, national standards that are just going to be a replacement for Common Core, but instead of having all sorts of liberal content, maybe they're going to have, quote, conservative content, or they're going to have, you know, Trump's China is evil content, right? Corey in the chat room is reminding he promised to indict Hillary too. Yeah, we talked about that at the very beginning of the show, Corey. Yeah, promised to indict Hillary, promises to get rid of Common Core. My prediction, just based on this little bit that I'm reading here and based on the quotation, right? We've got the actual quote from Trump. Right, this is a statement that was released from Trump's transition team, that they're talking about setting higher national standards and promoting the growth of school choice. So you will still have the huge federal bureaucracy. You're going to have different national standards. Maybe the standards will be streamlined and not so cumbersome as Common Core. Maybe you could be optimistic about that. But maybe they're also going to be content-laden, like Common Core, and they're just going to have different content. You know, it's the Republicans this week, it's the Democrats next time who are going to be indoctrinating your children. Of course, the only moral answer is to get government out of education entirely, to stop stealing from the taxpayers and stop, you know, funding education. Let people pay for their own education. If people cannot pay for their own children's education, then they should go to any sort of a charitable institution and try to get some help with those things. It should not be government's job to educate our children. And then if you ask the question, is Trump going to get us anywhere closer to getting government out of the classroom? It looks, I would predict just based on this so far, not so much. School choice, though, is good, right? So there have been, for example, laws, I believe, in Nevada is one that was pretty exciting in terms of expanding school choice. So if you are expanding school choice, but then you're saying, okay, you know, we're still going to maintain this huge federal bureaucracy, you're getting some better elements and some worse elements. Are the better elements enough to start crowding out the worst elements? Are you really going to give school choice to the extent of allowing real choice? Or, for example, maybe you're going to set these higher national standards. You're going to allow people to take their money to private schools, supposedly, but maybe you're going to start regulating those private schools and having them meet these, quote, higher national standards, which is going to then start smacking of fascism, right? It's not going to help us at all if we are reducing the government school bureaucracy, but we are going to be having increased government control of private schools through the so-called mechanism of school choice. So, Tim says that Trump has not reneged on any promise to prosecute Hillary. Again, you know, Tim, the thing that I would want to look into is the thing that a prosecutor friend of mine has talked about, which is that Trump has sent out Giuliani and somebody else to discuss, you know, the propriety of what Trump has said and is maybe doing some jury tampering, in which case he is undermining any future prosecution of Hillary, whether it takes place or not. This is the kind of stuff that we want to look at. And probably Trump shouldn't have spoken about it in the campaign or now, one way or the other. And that's where he's doing the misstep. But we shall see. We shall see. But here on education, like I said, it's, you know, see what they do in when it's actually in practice. But it doesn't look like they're going to get rid of Department of Education. It looks like they would probably get rid of Common Core, but just replace it with something else. And we don't know whether that something else is going to be any better from our perspective. And in addition, if they're doing school choice and then they're setting these standards, maybe they are going to impose these standards on private educational institutions in a way that Common Core does not now apply. I've spoken with people at private schools and asked whether they are actually constrained to Common Core. And as it stands right now, the private educational institutions do not have to have their kids take the exams and meet the Common Core standards. What if Trump says, okay, well, we're going to get rid of Common Core, that evil disaster thing. We're going to have these higher national standards and we're going to expand school choice. But the booby prize is that you are going to impose these higher national standards on private institutions in a classical kind of a little fascist way. And that's always the concern with school choice. Every time you accept federal money, and this is true when states, right? When states accept federal money, there's all of these regulations and strings attached to it. And this is how we got Common Core in the first place, right? It's not that the federal government had the power to impose Common Core on all the states, right? The states are autonomous with respect to that. However, if they wanted to continue accepting federal education funding, they had to adopt Common Core standards. It was part of an agreement in order to continue accepting certain federal monies. And now they might say, okay, well, we're going to have school choice. We're going to block grant money to the states that can be given to parents to spend on the school of their choice. However, then the states have to impose certain regulations according to these high. I can just imagine how it's going to go is what I'm saying. If they're talking about higher national standards, that is increased centralized control of education. And to me, that's disappointing. That's alarming. Yes, school choice is good, but school choice needs to be without any centralized strings attached. And that doesn't seem to be what they're talking about here. Continuing on with the main New York Times piece that I've got linked to at the blog, I'll have to go ahead and add this piece from the Detroit News on, you know, on the blog and in the program notes so that you can see more about DeVos. And they're talking about how these people are not necessarily themselves Trump supporters, right? They haven't been out and out Trump supporters. So, you know, it's not the case that Trump is only appointing people who supported him throughout the campaign. There are other types of people who have been been appointed as well. She and her husband have been behind the rapid expansion of charter schools in Michigan. Yes, charter schools are a little bit better, but they are still government funded. So this idea, you know, that they're trying to come up with, quote, more efficient ways to spend government funds to deliver, quote, higher quality education isn't necessarily going to help. And moreover, there's this sort of political support. They say that DeVos has lobbied for, quote, failed schemes like vouchers, which take away funding and local control from our public schools to fund private schools at taxpayers' expense. They say these schemes do nothing to help our most vulnerable students while they ignore or exacerbate glaring opportunity gaps, end quote. So we'll see if they're going, you know, there's going to be the confirmation of these candidates as well. The one thing that's interesting is they say, well, look, you know, he's got this diversity going on here, right? However, the New York Times is complaining that the appointments, even though they are diverse, you know, in terms of sex and skin color and stuff, that they're not really diverse in terms of, you know, going beyond the reliable conservative candidates. And actually, as I'm looking at this New York Times piece, they seem to have updated it and edited it as they're going on here. But they were saying that they seem, yeah, this is the quote that I was looking at earlier. None of the choices suggest a president-elect who is reaching beyond reliably conservative circles for his major policy makers. You know, New York Times is saying we lost, but we demand that you appoint some Democrats in your cabinet as these leading policy makers. On what grounds would you have a right to do that if somebody themselves has a certain political philosophy? Now, what you would do if you're smart, right, is you say, okay, I'm going to appoint as my major policymakers people who are in large agreement with me, right? In this case, pragmatist conservative is Donald Trump, I suppose, and we'll look at some of his economic picks in a bit. But, you know, you do that, you're going to appoint people that you think are pretty much in agreement with you as the major policymakers, as the heads of these things. But if you're smart, you'll tell them to themselves hire people with different perspectives to, you know, either help them with their actual thinking on the issue, decide what they want to do about particular policy decisions, or, you know, at the very least, to prepare them for the sorts of counterarguments against their policy decisions that they're going to encounter out there. It is good to have a diversity of opinion on the, you know, in the people who work for you. If you are in a policy making position, you want that, right? But you don't want it as the one person who's actually going to be at the end making the decision. What you would want is you would want, you know, people who are very strongly entrenched in the right kinds of ideas, but at the same time, people who are capable of listening to evidence and arguments objectively, at the very least, to make sure that they are prepared to defend their policy decisions properly out in the court of public opinion. At least you've got to be able to do that. But, you know, this idea that Trump, you know, well, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, so at least you should give us a few, you know, appointments of Democrats out there, that at least we should get that. No, you don't deserve that New York Times. He is not obligated to do that. When did, you know, Obama appoint some sort of major conservative to one of the decisions? Now let's see here what we've got going on here in the chat room over at Blog Talk Radio. Yeah. Educational choice, says Justine, would be more, little more of an illusion, a little less of a reality. We don't know for sure how it's going to shake out, right? So I'm going based on the quotation that I read about them wanting to have higher national standards. To me, that implies that they want to maintain centralized control. They want to maintain the Department of Education. And to me, the thing that is scary, given the fact that Trump seems to have no principled objection to using regulation and the heavy hand of government to achieve what he thinks are, in, you know, the quote of best interests of the nation, or quote, making America great again. I mean, she said we're going to make education great again. And you want to start focusing on that word make, right? Government's going to be making education great. Government shouldn't be making education anything. It shouldn't be making education. So, you know, if she's actually, and she actually did in her little press release or whatever, she said, we're going to make American education great again or something like that. That's scary stuff. If your goal is to get government out of education entirely. So I see this as, you know, there's a conservative. Yeah, she's in favor of choice and charter schools, but that still means maintaining that bureaucracy. And it could mean more fascist controls over private schools in lieu of maintaining a huge public school bureaucracy. And that would be worse, because then there's no escape, you know. Even homeschooling, perhaps, you know, they'll say, okay, yeah, you can have this federal funding, this block grant that you really want, California or whoever, you can have it. However, you as the state of California have to turn around in Common Core style and pass the regulations that we tell you you have to pass in order to get this money. And I'm worried about what the result's going to be. So that's what I got so far. I do have a caller over here in the chat room. If you call, a caller on the switchboard. If you call in 760-888-5817 and you want to talk, go ahead and press the 1 button, which is what this caller did. Hi, you're on the air. Who's this?
Hey, Amy, it's Corey.
Corey, how are you?
Good. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. We're going to have to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving at the end, obviously, since it's the day before. Do you want to give a little statement of anything about what you're thankful for this year?
Well, I'm thankful that Hillary didn't win.
Yes.
And I'm thankful for objectivists that are out there trying to fight the fight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got Yaron Brook and Alex Epstein and Don Watkins doing an awesome job out there, right?
Yeah. Well, and I saw a lecture from Alex Epstein up here in Minnesota. So that was really cool. I got to meet him and got his book, and he autographed it for me, and I read his book, and it's awesome, and it's an easy, quick read. So that was nice.
Okay,
and,
good.
And it was on my birthday, so... it was a great present for me there. So,
wow, very good, very good.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I got you distracted. What is it that you called in actually to talk about? I'm sorry.
Yeah. So no, that's okay. I'd like to talk a little bit about that too. What I'm thankful for is this stuff. But I wanted to get your thoughts, and you might be coming up on this, or you may have already touched on it. I came in a little bit late on his appointment his White House chief strategist, Steve Bannon. How do you feel about that? And can you touch on the outright? What are your thoughts on that?
Okay. So I put this link over in the blog, in the program notes at don'tletitgo.com. However, it turns out that the video that I linked to has since been taken down from YouTube. One of my listeners, actually is the one who sent me the link to this, who posted it on my blog. Let me see who I can give the hat tip to, because I want to be good and accurate with this one. Yeah, Avneet Paul is the one who sent me this on my Facebook.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
It was Ben Shapiro, and I watched a lot of that. I think I got I got through what they did. It was just an excerpt from Ben Shapiro's show. And he talked about Steve Bannon. He says, look, Bannon himself, not a racist or anti-Semite or anything from what he could tell. But the problem is that Bannon gave this platform to the alt-right and some of the worst elements of the alt-right. And this idea, you know, I would defer to Yaron, who's done an extensive analysis of alt-right. But this idea that you're putting these, you know, sort of provocative things out there just to put in people's faces, right? And they're horribly offensive ideas. Like I've seen this one about Milo Yiannopoulos, that he.
Yeah, easy for you to say.
It's very tough for me to say, which is horrible because he's like my ex-gay boyfriend, right? He put this thing out there about women would be a lot happier if we just got rid of household appliances and they had to keep doing all this physical labor because that would make them happy. And I don't even know that he believes this stuff, but it's like, you know, there is a certain point where you say, yes, in order to counter political correctness and in order to make sure that we still retain freedom of expression, we need to at least support the right to say these things. And you at least need to speak out in favor of the right to say them. But if you are going around like believably saying these bigoted, racist things, and you keep saying it over and over on the idea that, oh, well, you're just, you know, countering the PC culture and the safe space culture, at some point you maybe that you yourself, you start believing some of this stuff. I don't know. You just, or you end up losing the distinction about where truth begins and sensationalism ends and all of that. Right. Or truth
right.
ends and sensationalism
yeah,
begins. I don't know if I'm using my metaphor correctly, but you know, I do worry about the effect on the culture, even if supposedly that's his motive. Right. And certainly there are people who have been emboldened by it. And Bannon apparently had been bragging about the fact that Breitbart, even if Bannon himself is not a, you know, corrupt alt-right racist, whatever, he has not been upset about the fact that Breitbart has attracted that audience and, you know, in effect made money off of that audience. And that's terrible, right? That's a horrible thing, you know, this idea of encouraging or even, you know, happily taking the money from this horrible element within the culture, this, you know, these people who are truly racist and sexist and homophobe and everything else. That's
yeah.
kind of my view on the alt-right. Now the reason that Shapiro is against Bannon is because of his personal experience working with Bannon. He just thinks on a personal level, the guy did not treat him, you know, at Breitbart very well, but it had nothing to do with racism or these other things.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on that too, is like, yeah, people like Milo out there and Stefan Molyneux, who I guess has been pretty beating the drum pretty hard on some of the really, you know, real hardcore alt-right stuff, you know, and I think he's kind of serious, but I think some people are, Molyneux is more serious than I think Yiannopoulos is, but it's hard to tell exactly, but I think it's a real fringe group. I think that most, you know, average Joes out there that voted for Trump, I just don't see it, you know, in my regular life. I mean, I have neighbors that are like Republican, you know, conservative people, and you know, they kind of waver on that line, but I don't see them going full over that. You know, like I'm working on this neighbor of mine he doesn't like illegal immigration. He's against it. And I'm like, dude, you know, it's free association, man. If I want to hire someone that, you know, from Mexico to come and work for me, what business is it? You know what I mean? So I'm trying to hammer that point home with him, but he's so like, you know, America, you know what I mean? Like America, F yeah kind of guy, you know, but so I have some of that, but in my day-to-day life, like people aren't like way out right or whatever. That's this new thing. It's not like that. I don't, nobody's like hanging anybody or even talking about it, or, you know what I mean? I was like totally disassociate from anything like that, you know? So it's, I think a lot of it is there's some bravado about, you know, kidding about, you know, and it's, maybe it's their poor taste joke. Maybe these, you know, they're joking and it's in poor taste or whatever. But I know people in my general vicinity that are just kind of fed up with just being called racist and called sexist and called misogynistic and xenophobic. And they're like, no, we're not that, but we're, you know, we're voting because we're voting for Trump because we're sick and tired of being called that. And, you know what I mean? It's kind of one of those things. I don't know. I mean, they're just, you know, people that aren't that, but they're tired of being called that. So they're just going to, they want, you know, they're sick and tired of it. So that's kind of my, you know, dealings are kind of, I don't know a lot about the alt-right people or anything myself. I just, this is a new thing, and I'm just trying to shoot from perspectives that are around me right now where I kind of see things and where I'm at. So, and I'm in Minnesota, and it's a very liberal, you know, for the most part, state. You know, we're in a suburb of St. Paul, but, you know, the closer you get to St. Paul and Minneapolis, these people are, you know, they're so way to the left. It's like, that's the alt-left up there. So then, right. You know, these people are, you know, these people are saying we're this and we're that when we're not this and that. But you know what? Eventually, you poke people in the eye enough by saying, though, you know, that people in the suburbs are just hicks and they don't know it, you know, they're just going to say, all right, well, forget it. And then we're just going to go complete opposite of you. We're tired of what you're telling us out here, you know? So I don't know.
Well, maybe you know, all of those people are a candidate for the bubble. Is that where they are?
Yeah, the SNL bit. Yeah. Maybe they could do that. That would be something. SNL's been kind of, I don't watch Saturday Night Live really, but I just saw those little bits. Those are pretty good.
I mean, that's one of the interesting things is that I really hope that SNL stays around as an institution that will criticize both Trump and the liberals. And if they can continue to do that with some good humor, they're going to provide a lot of value for us. Because, I mean, here as an objectivist, I have my criticisms of Trump and I have my criticisms of the left. So I am the kind of person who would get the most out of a Saturday Night Live that continues to, you know, poke fun at both sides. And of course, you know, again, if you can also laugh at something that pokes fun at you, then you can even have more fun, right? Right. But, you know, again, for those of us who have both.
Yeah. Well, I was going to just say too, have you heard about this? This just came out earlier today that 6 electors are going to say that they're going to not go with the popular vote of their state and they're going to change it to Clinton. Did you hear about that?
6 of them. Now, what I did, first of all, I know that there's been a movement for this. And like I said, Joss Whedon is tweeting out that they should do the recounts and all this stuff. What I did hear is that in order for it to have an effect, that you'd have to have at least 10% of the electors decide that they were going to do this. And I gather that 6 is not close enough to 10% to have an effect, right?
Yeah. No.
But I mean, what do you think of an elector doing this? What do you think of an elector doing this?
Well, I would, you know, I don't think it's right. I mean, there was something where it had, my position is, you know, it's not right. But then it happened one other time in like 1850 or something, right? Was that something like that? Something happened way back. I don't remember exactly, but I thought I heard somewhere along the way that I think I heard that. I was listening to Rush actually earlier, and he might have mentioned something about that.
Here's kind of my opinion on this, all these things, right? So the electors apparently do have the power to do this. They can make this decision. And if they can, then I want to know, are they able to do this because this was part of the original system, right?
Yeah.
Or is this something that was modified later? If this is part of our original system, that they would have the power to do this, then you'd say, okay, well, this is part of our system of checks and balances. And I can see that some people are so worried about a Trump presidency that they think this is the time that they should be exercising this particular check in our system of checks and balances. I could see that. You know, it's so funny. This morning, I was reminded there's a Facebook friend of mine who coined, I don't know if he coined it or he, but he's been using it, and it they call Trump Cheeto Jesus, which I just love it.
Like it's orange, yeah.
It's so much fun. There, like I said, there are some things about Trump that are scary. One of them is that you have no idea what he's going to do. And that potentially in, under the guise of conservatism, he's going to make things worse. And like I said, you know, like I just went through analyzing that little statement from about the education pick.
Yeah.
It could end up worse than it was before, because you're still going to have the Department of Education. You're still going to have massive government spending on education. And now you're just going to switch from a model of public schools to private schools that have more government control over them, which is a very sort of a fascist model and quite scary.
And the electors should actually have to come out and explain themselves if that is the case too, right? You kind of touched, they should say, well, here's why we, you know, and it has to be not just because we're afraid. It has to be, you know, give me some of
why
reason.
They're afraid.
Why are you afraid? Why are you switching it? So they should be obligated to do that. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's one of the things that I think that they should have to do. You know, I say for, you know, Department of Education, make it Lisa Van Dam, man. We all need to, like sign a petition and pass it around and get it to Lisa.
Right. Or, you know, you could say, okay, well, Peter LaPorte, you know, head of LaPorte schools or something, go ahead and do him. You know, as now whether, you know, really ideally what you do is you would appoint somebody whose job is to just dismantle the whole Department of Education, but it doesn't sound like that's what Trump has done. So that's why it's a little bit scary.
Yeah. Well, he's not, that's not going to happen. You know what I mean?
Any views on any of the other picks?
You know, of the ones that, you know, you kind of already touched on the ones that I don't, you know, other than the ones that you talked about in Steve Bannon, you know, that's, I mean, Nikki Haley, those are really the only ones I have really done any kind of reading on or any.
And what's your view
about,
on Haley?
So,
what's your view on Haley? Most people like her, right?
Yeah. You know, she's a conservative Republican. You know, I think she's got some views on the social issue side, which okay, can you tell me, I'm sorry, I'm dumb, but what was she appointed to again?
Ambassador for UN. So insofar as, you know, she's going to have some sort of socially conservative views, I'm hoping that that would not affect any foreign policy positions that she'd be taking.
What's the UN, I mean, what's the ambassador to the UN really, I mean, I don't, kind of don't really understand that position, to be honest with you.
Try to actually stand up for American self-interest in that horrible international body. That would be my hope.
Okay, yeah, because, I mean, the UN is just a bunch of, you know, fat guys in fezzes trying to get out of parking tickets, you know, isn't that kind of just about it? I mean, what the heck, you know? So
maybe
I don't know. The UN, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, that sounds, I mean, yes, good, bad. What are your thoughts on her again? Yeah.
Well, I don't have a real formed opinion yet. I want to go and look more at her views, because what you always want to avoid is sort of the neocon idea. But if we have, you know, a woman who's prepared to go in there and proudly assert American self. Actually, I do like the idea of a woman going in as ambassador in the UN simply because, and usually I'm not an affirmative action person at all, but today where you have so many of these Middle East countries that are going to be strongly offended, if you have a strong woman going in there and asserting American national self-interest against all of these Middle East countries, I say more power to you. That would be wonderful. So I'm cautiously optimistic at that choice.
Yeah, she should come in with a pet pig too.
She should come in with what?
With a pet pig.
A pet pig.
Yeah, those Muslim countries, you know what I'm saying?
As her little asset. Yeah, no. So if Trump, you know, and Trump, misogynist, whatever, that is the perfect place to place a woman,
right.
in my opinion. It's like, look, we are going to have a woman as our strong representative in this body that is being pressured to bow to Sharia, for example. You know, there's all this stuff about they want to try to outlaw via the UN criticism of Islam, for example. If she speaks up strongly against all that kind of stuff and helps our ally, our true ally, Israel, and things like that, that would be
right.
wonderful to see. And I don't know, you know, if she turns out to be a neocon, whether that's even
yeah.
going to be a huge negative in that particular role. I just love the idea of a woman there. So that would be nice. Tim in the chat room says offending Muslims is worth it. Yeah. I would just, not knowing a whole lot else, I tend to applaud it. Anything else? Cause I want to go on to two of the picks.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Sean Allison and I want to talk about the Pompeo CIA pick.
Yeah, I'm going to get out of your hair here. I just wanted to say that my show...
You're not in my hair, Corey. I thank you very much for calling in on this day before Thanksgiving. So.
No, thank you. I'm thankful to talk to you. That's another thing that I'm thankful for.
I appreciate
it. My show is going live on Sunday, December 4th, in the Closet Objectivist from the People's Republic of Minnesota. Going live December 4th, and we got some good people on my podcast, and I hope that you can listen and everybody here can listen too.
So live December 4th, check out Corey. Okay, awesome. Thanks, Corey. Take care.
On Blog Talk. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, I've got another caller, and I think it's Debbie. Let me see. Hey, is this Debbie?
Hi, Amy. Yep, that's me.
Bonus, twice in 1 week. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I was actually calling to talk about John Allison primarily.
Cool, let's
so
talk. Let's talk. Because
yeah.
I want to know, you know, okay, so again, I'll give the background to people. John Allison is the tremendously awesome kick butt CEO, former CEO of BB&T. He is the one who was at the helm during this vast expansion, very profitable expansion of the bank. He's the one who led a bank that did not need TARP funds. And in fact, he strongly spoke out against the TARP funds. I've actually gotten a tour from John Allison of BB&T operations and how they implemented Ayn Rand's philosophy in order to achieve business success over decades. I mean, this guy is great. And the rumor is that he's in the running to be chief of the Treasury, considering that he knows a pile about monetary policy. This could be really nice, what's your view?
Well, once you said that, my first instinct was to like say, wow, that's awesome. And then a split second after that, I thought, oh, wait a minute. This is potentially problematic. Because
okay, so what, what's
know.
The problems? Because I'm sure you're going to echo the problems that other people have said.
Probably. I don't know what they've been saying, but I thought, oh, do we really want objectivism to be associated with a Trump presidency? Do we want people
right.
to say the Trump, you know, because actually, and it's kind of ironic because just this Saturday, Yaron kind of had a 30-minute rant about how important it is that Trump not be associated with objectivism.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
So take
a step back, right? It's probably going to be the case because objectivism is increasingly being talked about. It's increasingly being accepted. There are more people who are successful in the world who themselves are implementing objectivism as tools for their own success. Right. So these people are going out there in the world doing a variety of things. Boom, you know, technologies with the supersonic flight is another example. We are going to see some of these people being tapped for positions in government. And this is going to happen before we're ever going to have an objectivist full administration, an objectivist president. Right. So in principle, it would not be wrong for an objectivist like John Allison to join a non-objectivist administration. Otherwise, you can't have the idea that we're ever going to have influence. You know, the idea is, oh, well, we'll never get involved in politics until we can have a completely objectivist administration from top to bottom. that can't be what we're demanding, right?
Of course.
That can't be.
And I
of course.
Totally,
but
right, that's not realistic. It's not realistic.
Right. But yeah. You might say that Trump is so bad that you would not want objectivism associated with his administration, that this is not the time, that if it was a President Cruz, then you throw John Allison in there and you might be excited about that, but you're going to be at least leery of whether you would want someone as great and wonderful as John Allison, you know, in a Trump administration, right? That's the word.
Now,
yes?
Someone in the chat room saying about Greenspan, and I know that's the case. That was another concern I had, actually, that there was someone who was an objectivist. Now, I don't think that John Allison would go the way that Greenspan did, and you know, he's basically sort of became a statist. But that was another thing that came to mind. Like the last time an objectivist was in an administration, it didn't go that well, and so.
Right.
There is that, but yeah, I mean, he could do a lot, but then, I don't know. It's just really complicated. Does it make sense for there to be, this is another question. So obviously if he were being appointed as like the head of the EPA, for instance, that would be, you know, sanctioning evil for him to take it because there shouldn't be an EPA. But is it proper for there to be a Secretary of the Treasury? I suppose it probably is because.
Because the Treasury is valid. There is always going to be a national treasury. There's going to be some money. How is the government going to get its money is a whole other thing, right? So there's that. It's at least a valid role. Like you might say, okay, well, we should abolish the Fed. So if he was going to be Fed chairman, that there might be some problems with that. There's also a significant difference, though, that I wanted to highlight between, in my mind, John Allison and Alan Greenspan, and that is, again, John Allison's awesome track record as a successful CEO of a huge bank. And what this shows to me is that John Allison has been able to achieve tremendous practical success in the real world applying objectivism, but at the same time dealing with non-objectivists. And so in my mind, if there is anybody in the world who would be able to join a Trump administration, an administration filled with people who, as far as I can tell, are kind of pragmatist, statist, maybe even fascistish leaning, right? I just did that little analysis of the education pick. If there's anybody in the world who could go into that and do some good and, you know, give out statements that in a principled way don't associate objectivism with what's going on, if anybody could do that, if anybody could navigate that, that would be John Allison. Now, we might say, you know, you and I might say, and we could, you know, either I'm sympathetic with the idea that Trump administration might be so bad that you might say, oh God, I'd be so excited about him as Secretary of Treasury under anybody except Trump, right? I'm sympathetic with that view, but at the same time, if it did work out, and right now it's just at the stage of rumor and there's these other people who might be picked, and I posted a whole article about how there's this war about who the economic advisors are going to be. Some of them are what they're calling supply side, but it's basically cut back on taxes, cut back on regulations, and let the economy free. And then on the other side, there's the protectionist types. And there's this little war to see who's going to win out. And they have quotations from different people who've been associated with Trump. And a number of them are saying, God, I wish he'd, you know, not talk up this protectionist rhetoric so much, because obviously it's been discredited, this idea that we're going to achieve financial prosperity in the United States by slapping huge tariffs on goods from China. Every economist worth their salt has discredited this garbage, right? So we don't know what's going to win out under a Trump presidency. We do know that he's made a huge part of his campaign on promises to make, quote, you know, better deals, trade deals, to renegotiate NAFTA, to do whatever to TPP, right? It's sad. And so we don't know who's going to win out. This is just at the stage of rumor. But if they did end up getting Allison agreed to do it. Allison, you know, I don't think he would take the position unless he thought he could do some good. So,
right.
you know, in my mind, if he did end up taking the position, it would be a tremendously good sign, because it would mean that he thinks he's able to do some good. And I also know if anybody will be capable of doing some good in that mix of pragmatist-ish, statist-ish, whatever, that he could.
Yeah, and he could always resign if he felt that, if he reached a point where he thought that he was somehow sanctioning something wrong, or that he had just a major disagreement. I mean, that's always an option, and I would trust him to have that kind of judgment that he would be able to do something like that. And that, and he'd be in a position to make a statement, you know, and maybe, yeah, maybe he could kind of push them in the right direction and give Trump
a gold
some,
standard.
Some
oh, my gosh. Could he talk up the gold standard again? That would be wonderful.
Yeah, and even depending on, I don't know how much one could actually get done, or even someone as awesome as him, there's a limit to what one person can get done in an entire administration of people who aren't necessarily on the same page. But just having him there, yeah, and he'd have an opportunity to have a very broad audience if he were to do something like talk about the gold standard. And yeah, I mean, it maybe my first instinct, or my first sort of automatic response was correct, that it would be a really awesome thing. And if you were in the political spotlight, what if, maybe I'm just really unrealistically dreaming here, but what if that set him up for a potential run for the presidency later, you know, after the Trump administration? I don't
know.
Assuming
he even wants to do that, right? You know, even with this Secretary of Treasury idea, who knows whether he even would want to do something like this. But, you know, again,
right,
there may be at least is some interest for it to have reached the level of this rumor.
Well, one thing that I really agree with you about in terms of his ability to work with people. Now, I've never met John Allison, but I have read his books, and just he has this benevolence, and he has a really great win-win attitude. I mean, a lot of objectivists, not really prominent ones, but just sort of, I guess you'd say, the rank and file, there are a lot of just really mean, polemical, just obnoxious people, and they just are always, like, fighting and denouncing, and if you're not pure, then you are evil from top to bottom. But John Allison has this really positive attitude, and he has this sort of way, I get the impression, of interacting with people who are not objectivists, and just recognizing that there's a continuum, and that there are a lot of good things a person might have to offer, even if they're not right about 100% of the issues. And just this more positive attitude does allow you to persuade people more and pull them more in your direction than if you have this attitude of constant moral condemnation.
You appeal to people via the things that they care about, via their values.
He is
a wonderful, tremendous example of that, and how he was able to take objectivism and take the principles and break them into practical pieces that could be applied by the employees. I mean, he implemented objectivism in the employee manuals and in the speeches that he gave to employees in setting the policies for BB&T, and succeeded by doing that, by making them into practical guides for action at that bank. And it's just wonderful. For those people who haven't been exposed to John Allison before, and again, this is at the level of rumor, so it's so premature, and people were just engaged in this kind of spirited debate about it earlier today, you know, all saying all the things, you know, that you're concerned about. And I think there are legitimate concerns. But overall, like I said, my final word on it would be that if John Allison accepts the position, just knowing what I know about him, he's doing it because he thinks he could do some good. And if anybody could do some actual good in that sort of position, it's him. And overall, the principle cannot be that an objectivist can't join an administration unless it's a purely objectivist administration, right? You know,
no,
again,
definitely not that.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Trump so far away that, you know, it would be impossible to do any good? I would think that John Allison could make that judgment call as good or better than any of us, better than I could, for example. I think John could make that decision much better than I could. What I encourage people to do is like I said, go back to my blog, don'tletitgo.com, for the program notes. I have one link there, which is my interview with John Allison. A couple of years ago, I had the great honor of interviewing him for this show, and I really enjoyed doing that. You can get a taste of what he's about. I think people will be impressed. So that's that. You know, the other one that I wanted to talk about, and it's 10 minutes after the hour, I've got about 20 minutes left, and I wanted to see what you thought of this too. What do you think of this guy, Michael Pompeo?
Mm-hmm.
And I know two main things about him, and these are the two things that people, you know, see as competing, and some people are coming down that, you know, one of them is more important than the other, and I'll see what you think. One of them is that he's a strong opponent of the Iran deal.
A strong opponent of the Iran deal.
Second is that he has been characterized as a Snowden hater. Now, I don't know if Snowden hater. Now, I don't know if hate is exactly, you know, the way that you want to describe it, but let me give you a quotation. I've got a little Wired magazine clip on him. Pompeo told C-SPAN earlier this year that Snowden, quote, should be brought back from Russia and given due process. And I think the proper outcome would be that he would be given a death sentence. End quote. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's scary. That's scary. There are a lot of reasons someone could be opposed to the Iran deal other than that they have a principled idea about what foreign policy should be.
Sure.
It could be like a neocon kind of guy. And the fact that he wants Trump, Snowden put to death, or at least thinks that would be the just outcome after due process, suggests to me that he has the neocon mentality. So, I mean, wow, that's pretty scary. And the
neocon mentality would be consistent with the opposition to Snowden. So earlier there was a friend of mine on Facebook who was going back and forth a little bit about this and saying, okay, well, look, you know, he was a strong opponent to the Iran deal. And it is true that the Iran deal is a huge, you know, kind of basically threat to my survival, right? Because that Iran deal is apparently helping to fund jihadist terrorism against the United States. So obviously I'm an opponent of the Iran deal too. However, if you say, well, because he's an opponent of the Iran deal is such a huge threat, therefore you should accept this idea that he thinks that Snowden should be brought back from Russia and that he would be given the death sentence, I reject that completely, 100%. And, you know, the idea that you are in favor of giving the death sentence to someone who was a whistleblower against unjust government intrusion into our lives, a huge, you know, kind of a massive scale rights violation by government against United States citizens. This is what Edward Snowden stood up against. And, you know, again, I've gone through and read some of the things, and I do believe that, first of all, he earnestly thought that he needed to do this and that he had good reason to think that he needed to do this in order to expose these unjust government programs, these rights-violating government programs. The idea that you're going to put this guy to death and you think that's the proper role, it just sounds like it's completely out of 1984, that it is in favor of a totalitarian government, very nationalistic sort of idea. It would be in line with my worst fears about a Trump administration.
Absolutely. I mean, that is just so disturbing that you would not only, so he's obviously, he's saying that there's no scenario where, like, when the government's spying on all or one third or whatever it was of the citizens,
right,
and just doing all this horrible stuff that the NSA was doing, that he blew the whistle on. And this guy's concern is Snowden and not the fact that that stuff was happening, that the government was doing this. That is really awful. I mean, that guy sounds horrible.
Yes. Yes, it does. And you know, again, this means that he is probably himself an advocate of the NSA programs. And if you think about well, here's the two positions, and people are saying, well, because he has criticized the Iran nuclear deal, I should think he's good. If he is head of CIA, over which policy decision is he going to have more influence? Is it going to have to do with the Iran deal? No, that's like a Secretary of State sort of thing. Foreign policy advisors, CIAs aren't necessarily, you know, they're not necessarily advocating these deals with, you know, Iran. That's not their policy purview. But it is the job of a CIA director to be concerned about what sort of programs the NSA should be conducting and what, you know, whether somebody like a Snowden would deserve the death penalty for whistleblowing on those programs. So he would have more influence probably with respect to his views of Snowden than he would with respect to his views about Iran. The Iran views are good. The Snowden views are horrific. And I would hopefully, you know, again, this is another appointment that would have to be confirmed by the Senate. I can only hope that someone like Rand Paul would stand up against this.
Well, yeah, and maybe Ted Cruz also, wasn't he?
Cruz is not that great on the NSA stuff,
no?
Though, right?
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, he's not as good. Now he's better, but as I recall, you know, in terms of this outline encryption stuff, the mandating of the back door,
mm-hmm.
Cruz was not good on that issue. And that's
okay.
That's to me. Now, I don't think he himself would go to this extreme of saying you want to give Snowden a death sentence. You know, but think about this. If Trump really is this person who's going to have this relationship with Putin, what is to prevent them from getting Putin to hand over Snowden to and make this a reality?
Oh, now that's even more scary.
Yeah, a friend of mine was raising
that
on Facebook this morning, but I had already thought about it. And also another friend of mine, you know, kind of think similarly on some of this stuff, had raised it. Scary.
Right. And not only the horrible, horrible, evil injustice of doing something like that to Snowden, of killing Snowden, but in addition to that, if it weren't bad enough by itself, what's the effect going to be then on future whistleblowers, future potential whistleblowers? That the government's going to kill you, going to hunt you down and kill you if you blow the whistle on it?
And what does it mean for, just symbolically, for any opponent of government surveillance like myself? And I don't want to bore people, but those people who don't know about my strong views on this topic of government surveillance and even the collection of so-called metadata, which everybody think is, you know, they think it's so benign. Oh, it's just metadata. I have a link again to my article, Don't Tread on My Metadata. It is wrong for the government, without probable cause, without particularized suspicion, to collect even metadata. They need to have some probable cause and particularized suspicion, in my view. It's immoral for them to do this. If you allow it like we do today, like we still allow it, even since Snowden, we're going down that slippery slope towards 1984. And if they actually executed Edward Snowden.
Oh, my God. Oh.
I mean, can you envision a world in which Edward Snowden is executed? I don't even know if just crying. I mean, I would be in such shock. So this is horrible that this guy's even talking about it. And I don't care what he says about the Iran deal. Yeah, the Iran deal is bad, but this, I think, is even a worse sign about this guy. And I really hope that, you know, the Rand Pauls and some of the better Republicans in the Senate will unite Democrats and not let this guy be confirmed.
I hope so. I mean, and by the way, there's nothing inconsistent with the 1984 mentality of saying that, well, we don't like this foreign enemy, you know, of sort of stoking fear and rejecting the foreign enemy. In this case, it's a legitimate enemy, and it's someone that one should be opposed to, but maybe in this guy's mind, it's just more a matter of, look, there's these bad guys that we're at war with, and so we need to have a big government, and we need to be spying on people, and we need to hunt down Edward Snowden. I mean, that's entirely consistent in my mind.
Yep, I think that's right, you know. And I think actually, I think it was with respect to Flynn, who's another potential appointment, where they're saying he's really strong against Islam. And unfortunately, right now in foreign policy, we are being fed this package deal where we have these people like Bolton who are very good against the Islamic enemy, right, the jihadist enemy. And at the same time, they package that with support for NSA programs on the grounds, you know, that all three branches of government have vetted it and the blah, blah, blah. And, you know, who died and made Edward Snowden king is what Alistair.
I remember that.
What Bolton said. Bolton, don't dare let me confuse Bolton with Allison. I interviewed Bolton. I interviewed Allison. That's the only thing in common between these two guys. You know, Bolton is good on a number of things, but he is so bad on Snowden. I do have a link to that interview with John Bolton, again, at the blog in the program notes at don'tletitgo.com. Check that out. That was back in June 2013, right after the Snowden revelations. And Bolton had said that, you know, Snowden had committed treason and should be put to death. And at the time, but listen, this it's interesting because I'm thinking about that now. When I think about the prospect now of putting Snowden to death, it's affecting me a lot more emotionally than it did back in 2000. Because in 2013, it was just fresh, you know, and I was, I was pro-Snowden. But the idea that it would actually be possible for a government to put Snowden to death wasn't real to me back then at all, in a way that it is real to me now when I'm looking at this potential Trump pick. So, you know, again, I'm just asking people who are, you know, to just open your mind for a second and just envision what it would mean to put Snowden to death and what that would mean for the prospect of privacy in the future, what that means for the prospect of people who are earnestly whistleblowing against a government that is systematically violating our rights. It would be horrible.
Oh, I know. I can't. I mean, I just think it's important what the reasons are that someone is good as far as, at least on a practical level, against Islamic enemies.
Yes.
Is it because for the right reasons, or is it just because they like having this idea of an insidious threat that we're perpetually at war with that can give them
exactly
an excuse to assume power?
Exactly, because that's right out of the pages of 1984 as well. You know, the idea that you keep the population subdued by giving them this impression that we are in perpetual war with an enemy that can never be defeated. And I think Obama has tried to capitalize on that a little bit, and I could certainly see a Trump doing that even more.
Well, I hope that appointment gets blocked. It's hard to know what Trump thinks, if anything, I mean, about any particular issue.
Yes.
Including this. But you make a good – he raises this concern about his relationship with Putin, the fact that he's friendly with Putin, and that Putin, I hadn't really made that connection, that there's that literal, practical connection of Snowden is in Russia and Putin is the president of Russia.
Yes.
So, I hope that appointment gets blocked. I definitely. Are there objectivists out there? I haven't been in, you know, I don't like to go on social media that much anymore. Are there people saying that they want this guy Pompeo to be confirmed?
There was just one person who raised the fact that Pompeo was against the Iran deal, and that somehow that, you know, made him a little bit better. Let me, I was going to read you a little, because now I remember where it is. I've got this article from Stephanie Gutman on Facebook, and, you know, it was talking about some appointments for our economic team and how there's this kind of debate between the people who want more carrots and more sticks. And I'm trying to remember if this is where I saw it. They were talking about the fact that Trump basically has no experience at all, right? He's never been a politician. He has no set ideas. And so then here's this guy going out and choosing his cabinet. And I can't remember which of the articles that I was linking to did he say this. And it was really, oh yeah, here it is, right? This is from the Wall Street Journal. And it was published on November 20th. It says, inside Donald Trump's economic team, two very different views. And it says that the questions of staffing and policy briefs have taken on even greater importance to the markets and industry under a, coming Trump administration. Why? Because Mr. Trump hasn't held elective office, hasn't honed a consistent political ideology, or cultivated a bench of trusted advisors. So imagine, here's this guy, he's gonna, and this tells you just in a nutshell what we're facing with him as president. Hasn't held elective office, he hasn't honed a consistent political ideology, nor has he cultivated a bench of trusted advisors. And so that's why everyone is trying to read the tea leaves with every single different appointment. And like I said, in this article, they're talking about this war between the, people who want to roll back taxes and cut back regulations. They're calling it supply side economics, whether all of these people are supply siders or not. And, understanding what that is a topic for another day. But we do know that cutting taxes and regulations as a way to spur economic growth is very different from trying to do so by imposing trade restrictions and tariffs. And the trade restrictions and tariffs would be a disaster. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just thought I would read you that little bit. Anything else before I go on to a couple of items of sort of good news and just a little bit change of topic? I feel like, I almost feel like I should end a show on that ominous note of a government that might put a Snowden to death and what that would mean. And then I feel like I should steer to a tiny bit of good news. There is this one little bit that a friend of mine posted, which is that a federal judge has blocked Obama's overtime pay rule. Have you heard about this?
I have not, but I'm definitely down for hearing some good news.
Okay, well, here's a little tiny bit of good news. A federal judge has blocked the implementation of an Obama administration rule. Again, Obama does whatever he can unilaterally. And this rule would have extended overtime eligibility to some 4 million Americans. And basically what they do is they say that anybody who earns less than a certain amount and who works more than 40 hours in a given week has to be paid overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that, the way that they would expand the application of these overtime rules is by increasing the threshold at which, you would cut off the eligibility for it. And so now it would be increased to $47,476 a year. If your salary was below that threshold, then you would be eligible for overtime. Apparently, this threshold that Obama tried to impose is about twice what the current threshold is for overtime. So
yeah,
right now
like
it's about
national median income.
Yeah, national median income, pretty much try to impose it unilaterally. And so what a judge has done is blocked it. It was going to take effect December 1st, and supposedly it was going to send a jolt to the slow-growing U.S. incomes. You know what it would do is it would destroy jobs further than we've already had. Anyway, so that is one little bit of good news. People can also go over to the blog. I'm going to have to cut off pretty quick here and check out a couple other things that I've got. One is you can check out the 405 traffic freeway in Los Angeles, the stuff that those of us who live in Southern California face all the time. You've got horrible traffic in Northern California yourself, but you got to check out that video. It's really scary. And then Ben Shapiro has a piece challenging Obama, who has tried to say that he has a scandal-free administration. Obama's tried to say he has a scandal-free administration, and Shapiro lists 11 Obama scandal. So that's worth checking out. Everybody's distracted by Trump, and meanwhile, Obama's trying to get, some highway robbery committed on his way out of office. He's trying to whitewash his record. He's trying to impose all kinds of rules on us. And, heaven forbid he should actually try to pardon Snowden. I would say that that's a focus that we're going to have in future shows. How can we urge and get a pardon for Snowden to protect him from what might happen under a Trump presidency, right?
That would be very interesting.
Thanks for joining me. I'm going to go ahead and cut off the show and say goodbye while with you. So thanks to you. Thanks to all my listeners. One of the things that I'm thankful for this Thanksgiving. And I will talk to everyone on Monday, again, 3 p.m. Eastern time, 12 p.m. Pacific. Thanks, everyone. And thanks, Debbie. We'll talk next time.
Thank you.